It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
ESNY.
Welcome back to another episode of the Knicks State of Mind. I'm your host, Danny Small, back after not being on for a little while, but my co-hosts have held it down in the meantime. I'm here with Chip Murphy today. We have a very special guest coming over from Pod Strickland, and he's a contributor at the Strickland. We have Stacy Patton. If you're a Knicks fan on Twitter, I'm sure you know who Stacy is, and we're really excited to have him in and talk some draft stuff today. So Stacy, how's it going?
Doing well. Yeah, I'm flattered. I don't know if as many guys on Knicks Twitter knows me as you guys, but glad to be here and glad to talk some draft and Knicks with you and Chip.
Yeah, so I mean, we were just talking about it before the show, which is like a podcasting cliche. I've already hit my first one. Like, oh, we were talking about it before the show.
Take a drink, right?
But yeah, exactly. But so we're basically just going to kind of dive into some of the prospects at pick 11 for the Knicks. And I think obviously Knicks fans would love to have the first pick in the draft move up to top four, whatever. Like
that would have been Mark Tatum, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mark Tatum, he's in every Knicks fan's nightmares forever. But obviously that would be the ideal scenario. But I guess for us as kind of like podcasters and guys who are just, you know, live and breathe the Knicks, being at 11 is interesting because there's so many different ways that the draft could shake out. And there are so many different guys who could wind up at that 11th pick, either a guy falling or even the Knicks being kind of like a team that goes out of nowhere and takes somebody who maybe people had them lower on their boards. So I think it's a really interesting spot in the draft at 11. And I guess the way we can kind of just start this, and we'll start with you, Stacy, is who is the one guy kind of on your board right now that, I don't know, maybe he's a little bit lower for some people, or maybe he's higher for others. Who's the one guy that you're kind of like honing in on at that 11th pick for the Knicks here? And even maybe that's a bad question. Maybe is there a guy there?
There is one guy for me, but there's a couple of like 1A, 1B guys, mm-hmm. Especially with recent news. I think the guy, just based on everything we've heard for a long time, is Johnny Davis for me. But two other guys I think that could fall that I don't think has been talked about as much at 11 because it's doesn't seem likely they'll fall are AJ Griffin and Shaedon Sharpe. But of the most realistic guys and a guy who gets mocked to us a lot, it is Johnny Davis for me.
So what's kind of the one thing that stands out about Davis for you? Obviously he had like a, you know, Big Ten player of the year. He had a really nice year at Wisconsin and kind of like turned some heads there, but at least I guess for fit with the Knicks, what's the thing that stands out the most for you?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's three-level scoring. Mm-hmm. I think that the Knicks are in an interesting spot where they have young talent at pretty much every position. Mitchell Robinson might leave, but even at center, you have a guy in Jericho Sims who showed some promise. I don't think he's ready to be a full-time starter yet, mm-hmm. but his improvement was very dramatic. You know, at the four, you have Obi. At the wings, where I do think the Knicks are a little light, and we can talk about that a little bit later, but you have Cam and RJ. And then even everyone, you know, the constant theme for what seems like forever is we need a point guard. The Knicks have a few guys there. So I don't think they need to take a point guard for the sake of taking a point guard. But the two things I think the Knicks are missing are like freakish wings. So yes, RJ is a wing. Yes, Quentin Grimes can guard threes. And I like both those guys as prospects, but you watch Toronto, you watch a team like Boston and the kind of success they're having in the playoffs. They have these 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", guys who can guard 2 through 4, 1 through 4. They can put the ball on the floor. They can do other things. And we've been through many free agencies, and the Knicks will sign guys like Evan Fournier. They'll sign guys like Alec Burks, but that guy is tough to find. And that's where I think you really want to capitalize in the draft. So I know I just mentioned that. I'm talking about Johnny Davis now. But the other thing is true three-level scoring. And quickly improved a lot at the rim. Still not really his forte. RJ doesn't really have a mid-range game or a pull-up game. And you know, Obi is a terrific... Obi can really get buckets, but he's not really a self-creator in that way. They need a guy like that in Johnny Davis. So that's the first thing that sticks out, is he is very adept at getting to the rim. Certainly better than most of the guys the Knicks could get there. Like, besides Ivy, I would say there's not really a guard in the draft who can get to the rim like that. Adds, has a real mid-range pull-up game. I think on, like, he's kind of like a bizarro Quentin Grimes, because on defense, they're very similar, as like guys that are ideally two guard size, but they're so strong, have such a high motor and great instincts that they can guard threes. And on offense, he's kind of the opposite of Quentin Grimes, where Quentin Grimes is this awesome, terrific shooter who can move, really intelligent. Not to say Davis isn't, but great off ball, but can't really do much in the paint yet. And Davis is, he's a good spot up shooter, but the 3-point shooting isn't there yet. But he's terrific at getting to his spots. He can finish at the rim. His athleticism is a real little bit underrated, I think partly because he had Wisconsin on the jersey instead of, you know, Kentucky or something.
I think that's fair, yeah.
I saw you tweet about that. I think you're 100% right about that. The stigma around Wisconsin is going to hurt him. I think,
and his spacing was bad, because they really didn't have, like, they won the Big Ten. And it was pretty talented. And they, and he dropped, I think, like 37 and 14 on Ivy. So he has the production. And the last thing I'll mention with Davis, and you know, I'll open it up to you guys. I've talked for a bit, but the last thing I'll mention on Davis is he really fits the mentality they seem to have. Like, if you like, you know, we talk about the need for vets and for veteran leadership, and a big clash among Knicks fans is kind of, you know, wanting to play the young guys more. And I think one thing that kind of maybe people don't talk about as much is how much the young guys have become leaders of this team, particularly Quickly and RJ, and they're guys you have to keep out of the gym. And that's everything you hear about Johnny Davis. Like, he is, you see him play on the floor on defense. You see his attention to detail. And you see what he was, not a very heralded prospect out of high school, you know, had a solid rookie freshman year, and then had a massive improvement. And I think he would fit in very well culturally. And he, you know, lock in right on the defense. He's, I mean, I think lots of people say this, he's very much a Tibbs guy in terms of his motor and all that. And then he also adds the element of three-level scoring, which for all the young talent the Knicks have, they don't quite have a guy who can do that yet, which you need in the playoffs, as we're seeing. So,
yeah, yeah, I think – go ahead, Chip.
Go ahead, Danny. Go ahead. Yeah, I was probably going to say the same thing as you.
Right? Yeah, we're usually on the same wavelength there. Yeah. But, yeah, I think your point about Davis being a three-level scorer, like, it's one of those things I like, I've had in, you know, scouting reports I've written about guys. Like, it's one of the things I like, I look to highlight, because as you said, you know, RG is kind of still working on his mid range a little bit. Quentin Grimes isn't necessarily a guy who goes into the paint and finishes quickly, as great as he is as a 3-point shooter. And then like with his float game and all that, he's still got some work to do at the rim. So a guy that you can, you know, really just give the ball to and, you know, 6 seconds left on the shot clock and say, hey, you know, we need something, go get yours. I think that's something that the Knicks are obviously still clearly missing out on. And you can even go back to the playoff series with Atlanta. That was, you saw just kind of how playoff defense, once it ratcheted up a little bit, you saw kind of how the Knicks were exposed a little bit in that area. And obviously, I don't think any of us think Davis is going to come in and, you know, automatically be like a dominant scorer and a, you know, all-star and, you know, take the Knicks in the playoffs and be the guy. But I think at 11, if you're looking at him and you see some of those traits that he could develop into, because he's still very young, he's strong, like you said, he's a good defender, better athlete than people give him credit for. It's like you start seeing more and more of that, and it's like, okay, if he's there at 11, I think that would make a lot of sense for the Knicks.
Is there a good chance he's gone by 11 though? Because
it's definitely possible. I know, to me at least, Wizards seem like a decent fit for him. There are a few teams above the Knicks. So if he falls and he's there at 11, obviously I think that's a pick the Knicks might make if he's available there.
He's very Spursy, which is not
yes,
very encouraging, but they do have a million guards. So that factors in.
Mm-hmm.
He reminds me a lot. I'll throw this out. I don't know if you, but I think he has a higher ceiling, but he reminds me a lot of Josh Hart. He's a terrific defensive rebounder. I think that's and like not like stat chasing defensive rebounds, but like just legitimately a very good rebounder, especially for a guard. And I think like I could see the Pelicans being into him for that, for what he brings, right? As well as but they have shot creation, so who knows, maybe they'll pass on him as well.
I like the fact that we watched him do everything at Wisconsin. And he did it with a smile on his face, like no complaints. And he just kicked ass all year. And like you said, he played on a team with a lot of pretty lousy offensive players, and they were incredible in the bit. They won the Big Ten, and you know they struggled in the NCAA tournament, like they tend to do at Wisconsin. But he's the guy I want at 11 too. He does a lot of things that we need for the team, like the stuff that Fournier was supposed to help the team with, and he was supposed to be more than just a shooter. And I think he's capable of doing that. I'm not going to trash Evan Fournier on this podcast.
He's also 31, and it's fair to question or 30 or whatever he is, but it's fair to question if that's like, you can look up highlights of young Evan Fournier and he could yam on dudes.
Yeah.
It's not happening anytime soon. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. He's a more of a spot up shooter now and a really, really good one. Yeah, but I think that pulling up in the mid-range and creating, which is more of what we were hoping for more of that from Evan this year, I think that's something Johnny can just slot right in and do. And I think there's room for him to create on this team, and I think he'd be a steal at 11. But you mentioned AJ Griffin, too.
Yeah.
And it's funny, we were talking to Derek Murray from Basketball News, and he mentioned AJ Griffin possibly slipping to 11 because of, I don't know, something that happened at the combine, I guess. And it was more of, he said more of other guys moving ahead of him than because of him. And if he potentially slips to 11 and Davis is still there, that's going to be a really hard decision for those two, between those two prospects, because I know AJ Griffin has injury history and that's a concern, of course. And Davis is probably a better defensive player at this point, but with AJ Griffin's body, and obviously he's already an elite shooter.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like AJ Griffin was boxed in at Duke into a specific role, and Paolo dominated the ball so much, and rightfully so. He was a great isolation player, but I think he can do more offensively already than he was doing at Duke. And I don't know, man, if they're both there, I think it'd be hard to pass up AJ Griffin.
And I think that goes back to Stacey's point about how like the Knicks don't have these like freakish, you know, just athletic wings, and Griffin,
yeah, that's
maybe
what I was thinking.
Yeah. Is maybe Griffin, he's not the tallest or the longest guy
he's
in the world,
6'8",
yeah, but he's a tank. I mean, and you obviously know he's got the NBA pedigree. He's a local guy.
Again,
like,
again,
I don't know how much
Tibbs guy, by the way,
I don't know how much. Yeah. I don't know how much they like stock they put into that, obviously, because you're born and you live in White Plains doesn't mean the Knicks should draft you, but it's just one of those things that you think about. And then, yeah, I mean, he's already like, he's a elite 3-point shooter. What did he shoot, 45% at Duke last year? And if his shot creation comes around, he can go from being like one of those freakish 3-and-D wings who can knock down threes and guard kind of 2 through 4. He goes from one of those guys where if he adds kind of like some shot creation, then he turns into kind of like a legitimate, I don't know, maybe star is overselling it a little bit, but you know, I think you guys know where I'm going with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's first of all, I grew up in Stanford. So if I sincerely hope that if you can grow up near New York City, I wish that would mean you could get drafted, because But what I would say with Griffin, so there's a couple things with the 3-and-D. One of those things is very loud, and one of those things was downright bad at Duke.
Yeah.
Which is related to what you were talking about with the athleticism, Danny. He's a weird prospect to me, because if you look at who he was in high school, and you have that level of shooting, that player could be the best player in the draft. that is a player that I would make a case needs to go top three. And then if you look at him and he's this level of shooter, but the athleticism never comes back, he's probably not going to be a good defender.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably something like Buddy Hield if the shooting maintains. And to be clear, he is. It's not that he's a good shooter. Like Benedict Mathurin is a very good shooting prospect. AJ Griffin is on another level. Just his production, like the pull-ups, he is an elite shooter. And I think Buddy Hield as like that, that is a very reasonable outcome. But without the defense, that's less intriguing. That's like Buddy Hield is like, I think Johnny Davis would be a better pick if that's what I'm looking at. But if I have the shot creation from high school, the athleticism, like he had above the rim athleticism in high mm-hmm. school. He is big and long. And if he gets that quickness back, he could be a really good defender. So it's tough. It's like, it's weird because you're looking at him at his 11, which is not quite the average, but kind of a middle outcome between maybe 14 and three. But depending on how his athleticism grades out, I would either go something like 14 or 15 or three, right? Mm-hmm. So you're basically, you're just in the middle of that. But I think I agree with both of you that like the star upside, he has legit star upside if you buy that his athleticism from high school is going to come back. Because like a guy who can shoot like that, he does have ball handling ability. He can get his own shot. I do think part of it was Paolo. And then a lot, like, you know, in terms of his, not just Paolo, but even Trevor Keels is a talented guy they featured. Wendell Moore is a very talented shot creator, certainly at the college level. So that play, and we've seen that at places like Kentucky and Duke, where mm-hmm. you have guys that pop a little bit more in the pros with better spacing and with more.
Gary Trent Jr. barely did anything when he was at Duke.
Exactly. And maybe that's a decent comp for Griffin, especially since I don't think Gary Trent Jr. is that great as of a defender. Mm-hmm. But the last thing I'll say also, Duke has had, I know Chip, you follow college pretty closely. And I think Duke for a while has just been not great on defense. And a lot of their prospects come out as not great defenders. RJ was a bad defender in college. He's been better than that in the pros. Jason Tatum, there's been guys who've said, you know, well, there was potential in college. I didn't think of much of him as a defender in college.
He was a bad defender in college.
They finished 86th in KenPom. Mm-hmm. You can't put that all in one guy, but guys with like what Tatum is now as a defender, and granted, Boston deserves some credit for the development. That wasn't something I would have been comfortable projecting out of Duke. On the flip side, you have a guy like Zion, who was an elite defender at Duke and isn't now. But Zion's is old. But I do just wonder.
That it's kind his of, progression from whatever you want, regression from Duke to the NBA is shocking. And defensively is just shocking.
Yeah. But I do wonder if, is there a thing with Duke in terms of defensive prospects, especially one and done's not really maybe embracing or not embracing is the wrong word, but like developing defensively under Coach K with only a year. You know, I think he has kind of a system which probably is better for 4 year guys. You've seen how much Mark Williams improved. So maybe that's the thing, but maybe, you know, with more time, someone like Griffin will pop more on defense. And I think that applies to Paolo too, by the way, who I think probably has a lot more defensive ability than he showed. It's kind of like the opposite of the Kentucky bump, right? Where we talk about guys like Booker, Hero, Shade Gilgeous-Alexander, Quickly, who showed a lot more creation ability than they were allowed to display at Kentucky. I wonder if that's kind of a thing with Duke on defense. So that's another thing.
And Wendell Carter Jr. played with Brandon Ingram. And really, you saw the best of him when he got to the Orlando Magic offensively and defensively, because he got to play in the post and play center on both ends. And it just happens when you play with that much talent sometimes. And you're right about Coach K and defensive prospects with the one and dones. He just doesn't get the best on both ends out of those guys anymore. I think it's because he just wasn't used to coaching those guys for so long. And then they came in and look, he was old, man. He was old. And then
and even Coach Cal struggles with that too, right? Like not all of the Kentucky, BJ Boston is a guy in LA who's popped this year, and you know, it didn't work for Calipari, right? It's not an easy thing to ask for a guy. Yeah, so.
Especially, like a guy who knows he's going to be at Kentucky or Duke for, you know, 9 months or what, you know, whatever it is. And then you're going to be a lottery pick like next year. Kind of, I mean, you got to think these are 18, 19 year old kids, like getting those kids to buy in and be like, play defense every single possession. Yeah. It's not exactly easy when they know what's lying ahead for them.
Exactly. The year they won the championship, Duke, in 2015, he had Justice Winslow, who he didn't need to go. He was just a great defender that year. And Tyus Jones was solid. But I mean, he ended up winning with Jahlil Okafor, which was shocking. But
yeah,
he was the third best player on the third best NBA player on the team. But saw that coming as a Duke fan, watched him and saw that coming a mile away. Was so happy the Knicks didn't take him.
Well, they didn't have the chance, so.
Yeah, so happy.
I think Phil Jackson really liked the butt, right? That was Phil Jackson's
game. Yeah. So. I don't know why,
100%, Phil Jackson was taking him.
You think so? I mean, I feel like Phil Jackson's, I mean, he did a lot of dumb shit, I guess, when he was with the Knicks, but I watched Jahlil Okafor get bullied by St. John's at the Garden, by Utah in the NCAA tournament, like by Wisconsin in the NCAA tournament. I just saw it. You saw it coming if you watched him. Like, he just couldn't guard anybody.
Yeah. So I guess that kind of
don't need to go down an
open. Yeah, I was going to say that. Sorry. That almost segues because we hit a wing in Griffin. We hit kind of like a ball handler guard in Davis here. And I do think, to Stacey's earlier point, I think the Knicks are kind of spread out talent-wise in enough spots where you're not like, all right, we need a center or we need a point guard. We need this. I think they have some flexibility there. So I guess if we're thinking about Mitchell Robinson possibly leaving, what are your guys' thoughts on Jalen Duren? And if he were to fall to 11 there at the Knicks?
I'm generally not a fan of, let me put it like this. It's not that I don't think centers are important. I'm not a fan of using, you know, someone who's probably going to be mostly a role man and a garbage man on offense and a rim protector on defense, using a lottery pick for that, especially in this draft, where I think there's a few guys in the second round. A guy like Christian Coloco comes to mind who had a good combine, so he might sneak into the second half of the first round. But whether it's that, whether it's signing a guy like JaVale McGee or something, if that's what you want from the center position, I think there's other ways to find that. I do think Jalen Brunson, Freud and slip there, right? Duren.
Yeah, big time.
Is a pretty special prospect in his own right. I think his mobility is really good. I think that unlike a guy like Mitchell Robinson, he's flashed the ability to kind of pass on the short roll, maybe take a dribble at the free throw line. This is something where, you know, Mitch doesn't have the best hands. And if you give him the ball at the free throw line, he can't really turn that into a scoring opportunity with like a few very, you know, a few exceptions. So that's what he gives you. I think like in terms of a ceiling, a lot of people say, you know, there's Robert Williams vibes from him, where he's a switchable big, protect the rim. And on offense, he's not just a dunker, like not a shooter. But you know, there's people who buy the shot from Duren. That's not something I'm willing to bet on his first contract. Yeah,
not quite ready to buy in on that.
Yeah, I think he was like a 60% free throw. Like I don't really buy Mark Williams as a shooter, but I would be more willing to buy Mark Williams as a shooter than Duren. But Duren has that mobility. And we've seen like what switch, like Mitch gained weight and this year, like he wasn't quite as switchable. I think that's a little bit overstated. In the second half of the year, he got better at switching. But you saw what a guy like that can do in Jericho Sims. You know, the Knicks were able to get very creative with him on defense. Jericho Sims still has a lot of work to do as a rim protector, but their defensive rating was 5 points better with him on. Part of that might be he got to play with Grimes and McBride and like really tenacious defenders. So he's helped by that. But you could see he, for a 6'10 guy, moves extremely well. And that does have a lot of value. So if they pick Duren, that's not my first pick. I think if they want help at the five, there's another guy I think who I would prefer, who we'll talk about later. But I think the talent is there. So it's not, I think that my thing would be if they're going to let Mitch walk, I think to me that would be like, all right, we realize that unless you're getting a star, like unless you're getting a top five player, my philosophy is top five to top eight in terms of a center. So like Jared Allen or Aiden or someone like that, like you can find like the top 8 to 12 centers, the difference between the top 8 to 12 centers and like 15 to 20 isn't that much. And the guys who are 15 to 20 don't get paid that much. Like if we had to roll with JaVale McGee, Jericho Sims, and Taj Gibson, but we added like a promising wing in the draft or a three level scorer, that, or you know, use that money that we might have spent on Mitch on, you know, one of those types of players, I would be much more comfortable with that in terms of an allocation of resources. But if they think Durant has the upside to be like Bam, or if they have come from their development, that's, you know, then it's tough to, in the draft, it's tough to bet against this front office. So,
yeah, that was a question I was going to ask too. Are you just based on this, the way this team has drafted, so this front office has drafted so far, are you just comfortable drafting in with them picking at any pick at 11 or them trading up or trading down anywhere?
Yeah. To answer your question, yes. I think if there's an opportunity to trade down, they have Brock Aller, and we saw what they did even the first year, like moving. They had 8 and 27, but they moved 27 to 23 and then back to 25, and they got like an extra second round pick, which they turned into future second round picks. He's going to do that on the edges. And that, you know, for example, Jalen Williams is a guy that maybe they would want to trade down. I think they do like him a lot. Jalen, J-A-L-E-N.
Yes.
From Santa Clara, not Jalen Williams from Arkansas, who I also like, by the way, but I think at the lottery, they'd be more likely to pick with Jalen with an E. But yeah, I'm comfortable drafting wherever because I don't think they've missed on a pick. A lot of people will bring up taking Obi over Halliburton and Maxey, which I think is the closest they've come to a miss. But even then, Obi's been very productive. And the last thing I'll say is they're in a better position now because when they came in, we had no young, our young talent was Frank, Knox, and Mitchell Robinson. Mitchell Robinson was a contributor. Knox had already looked every bit the part of a bust. Frank had some ability to stick maybe in the role that he is in now in Dallas, but clearly they had very little young talent. So they needed to hit on those picks. Obi, I think, was a guy who maybe didn't have the upside of Halliburton or Maxey is, I think, weird because he went 21st. So, you know, I think that they needed to get contributors, and they've done a great job of that. Grimes, I think, was another example, right? Maybe a guy like Bones Highland had a higher upside than Grimes, but Grimes has come in and you see what he brings. They have all of these young guys, and now they're in a position where, like, all right, you don't need to. Ideally, we wouldn't want to waste the 11th asset, but you can take a home run swing. And I'm curious to see if they approach it because they haven't taken a one and done, for example. They've never taken a one and done. They've taken one international prospect in Yoko
Which
Bittis.
Is interesting considering they're the Kentucky Knicks and they've never taken a one and done prospect. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I do, for what it's worth, I do think they were, if they had the opportunity to take Maxey, I think they would have taken him.
Yeah, probably.
From what I've heard, they tried to trade up to get him. Like they were at 23. I think they would have stayed at 23 if he was going to be there. And I think they did try to jump the Sixers. So I think they liked both Maxey and Quickley. But they've also only taken one Kentucky guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested to see if that's a philosophy. And partly because I think one and done guys are probably a better bet in the top 10. But if you're in the 20s, you know, that's like a little bit more murky, right? That's probably where you want to go with a more established guy. So they've both been in the position of A, really needing contributors to add young depth, and B, picking later in the draft. Whereas at 11, they're now in a position where they probably have more options, where I'm curious if we'll see if that's a hardcore philosophy over there, is like take multi-year players, take guys who you know are going to be contributors, but also have some upside, versus taking a home run swing. Because they haven't really taken one.
And I think one of the interesting things, I mean, I guess Obi kind of not in this category, but Quickley and Grimes, they were both pretty like lower on most people's boards. And I mean, you look at, what was it? The CBS grade on Quickley was like D+. I think we've all seen that screenshot a million times.
I think Quickley himself has retweeted that.
Yes. Right. Like I feel like I've seen that a million times. And then Grimes, I know a lot of people thought he was going to be like kind of an early second rounder. So maybe not as egregious there, but I think that's a good sign. You don't ever want the front office taking guys like to prove a point and prove like, oh, look at how good we are at, you know, scouting talent. But I think those two picks right there show you that the Knicks pretty much seem like their scouting department is doing a good job at kind of identifying these guys who other teams might be undervaluing or not, you know, looking at, and figuring out like, okay, we think those guys can be, you know, whether or not they ever become stars or anything like that is one thing. But if you get good, solid players who it looks like Quickly can be a starter in this league, looks like Grime has that potential. If you can get guys like that in the 20s, I mean, that, you know, that's a home run. There aren't many all-stars in every draft. Like, when you get legitimate contributors, that's a win every time in my eyes.
Yeah. And I think it's also, I'll go back to this. Like, I think that it's tough to say, it's also tough to know what they'll do with this pick because they've only been in the lottery once.
Mm-hmm.
And so do they view, like, you know, you can talk about skills. They seem to like pull-up shooters, right? The only non-shooter they've drafted is Jericho Sims. But even Obi was a 39% shooter, low volume in college, but he could shoot. He was versatile, right? Quickly pull-up shooter. Grimes pull-up shooter. Jokubaitis, not quite that volume, but can shoot. McBride was a shooter, and this is a hill I'll die on. If there are people who want to compare Deuce to Frank Ntilikina, watch the guy shoot, watch his tape. This is a shooter. This is a guy who took a lesser role, especially after he's out of the rotation. You look at his advanced analytics projections, the guy can shoot. But they love pull-up shooters, right? But they've also been, maybe that's the value in the 20s and 30s, right? Maybe like if you're picking at 25, are you better off taking a guy like Sharif Cooper who can get to the rim but can't shoot? Maybe they would say the guys they've taken are better all-around contributors and the pull-up shooting is being undervalued there. But at 11, it might be a different story, you know? So.
Yeah, I think, well, they need shooting anyway. I think they just need to keep adding shooters anyway. That's an important position in the league right now. So adding as much shooting as you possibly can is just something the Knicks need to do. That goes back to the Johnny Davis conversation. But you were saying earlier that there was another big guy you were interested in besides Jalen Duren. Yeah, who's the guy in his that you were talking about earlier?
Yeah, and I'm not sure if Tibbs would play him at the five much, but I think he should. And that's Tari Eason. So I think he can play the three, the four, and the five. I think he can walk into the NBA and guard four positions and some fives. I think in time with more physical development, he's already very physically developed. I think he can guard five positions, which is very rare. And there's probably less than five guys you can actually say that about, but I think he has that potential. And that probably gets overused, and there's a good chance I'm wrong. But I mean, he is one of those guys when, you know, there's in football and basketball, you see this a lot, like guys who walk off the bus and you're just like, wow. And that's what he seems like, just a physical specimen, 6'8", 220, 7'3" wingspan, massive hands. He is a very good athlete. He's not quite Obi, but I think after Obi and Sims, he'd be probably the best athlete on the team. He has some ball handling ability. He's very right hand dominant, but he's shown dribble moves. He's flashed a few pull-ups, although that's not really in his wheelhouse. He has a little bit of a weird looking shot. It's a low release kind of from his right side, but he's improved tremendously. He was a terrible shooter as a freshman, and the results are not much you can argue with. He shot about 39% from three, 80% from the free throw line. And he's turnover prone, but he has the vision to make pretty solid passes. And on defense, he's a monster. I mean, advanced stats just pop off the page for this guy. Block rate close to 7, steal rate over 4. His BPM was higher than Chet Holmgren's, who is obviously possibly the number one pick in the draft. And that is one reason a lot of people like Chet Holmgren. And by extension, he's higher than guys like Evan Mobley, who are also advanced stats monsters. And he gives you that positional flexibility at the 4 and 5. And I would play him at the 3 too. And I mean, like, I think like there's a high floor in that he should be at the minimum an energy big combo forward. But you watch some of the things he can do, like his scoring per 36 per 100 possessions was only topped in the draft, or at least the lottery prospects, was by Keegan Murray. So people worry about his offensive game, but one thing he did was put the ball in the bucket. And you see the skills and you see the touch. He's developed a little bit of a floater game. The issue is he's very right-hand dominant. doesn't have a ton of pull-up game, and a lot of his buckets come from a cohesive, like he's going to break down a ball handler and run your offense through him. Like that, you haven't seen that, but a lot of that skill set is there. And I think the upside to be that kind of guy is there. He himself said, you know, right now he's similar to someone like Herb Jones, but he sees a ceiling as someone like Kawhi Leonard. And that's, I think, a difficult projection for any prospect, not least because Kawhi
good confidence.
Yeah, very
confident. Well, I think it actually was pretty simple.
But acknowledging that was a ceiling. Acknowledging that Herb Jones is more like who he is now. It's better than him saying, I'm like Kawhi Leonard right now.
Yeah, he's saying it shows that he's striving for that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what he could be. And Kawhi himself had basically is one of the freakish development stories. Maybe not quite on the level. Like Giannis and Hakeem Olajuwon are probably the two craziest development stories ever. But Kawhi, you know, was not a three-point shooter out of college and was mostly, but Kawhi was another guy who was seen as like a defensive wing. And he's been that, but you know, the other part of it obviously changed completely.
A little bit more too.
But I think Eason, just watch him play on tape, and it's like, even like I love Donnie Davis and I'd love to take him, but I watch Eason and I'm like, damn, if that guy was on our team, he looks like he could be a star. So he would solve, like if Mitch does walk and you have Jericho and Taj, maybe you sign a guy like JaVale McGee. If you want a five that can allow the Knicks to play five out, you see what Dallas is able to do. I think being able to play five out would add a lot to both quickly and especially RJ, right? Not having to deal with rim protectors. You see what it does for Luka and Brunson. I think that would allow the Knicks to give a different look, especially since I do wish Tibbs played Randall and Obi together more, but I can see why he wouldn't play Obi at the center position. Not as agile. You don't really want him in drop coverage. Eason can do those things, and he's the same size as Obi. So
that's interesting because I think I probably had Eason into this box of like a combo forward more so, or like a, you know, like a long freakish wing. But the more you kind of talk about like him as like that small ball five, and it's probably, I'm not thinking about it just because, as we've said, Tibbs is hesitant to play that small ball. He likes having his big rim protector out there, but Eason as a possible small ball five is very intriguing with kind of the collection of players that the Knicks have now. I've said this about, you know, I get why Tibbs likes having his rim protector. He likes playing from the inside out, building it from the paint, and then getting out on shooters. Like I get where he's coming from, but I think it's much better to just kind of have that versatility where it's like, all right, if you want to play your two bigs 48 minutes, that's fine. I get that. But there's going to be some games where it calls for maybe we need to go a little bit smaller. Maybe we need to mix it up. Maybe we need to do, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I haven't really thought about Eason as that small ball five, but I kind of like it. I could see that. I could definitely see that working.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll say this about Tiz. I think he likes rim protectors, but when he had Jericho in there, he got more creative defensively. When he has a guy who can switch, like some of the most fun defensive lineups were like Deuce, Grimes, Cam, RJ, or Quickly, and they could switch everything. They were ball hawking guys with the agility to stay with guys. They played perimeter first and just heated up the ball, and they got out in transition. And I think he'd fit perfectly in that. And, you know, with Eason, I mean, he's very much like if Masai Ujiri, the Knicks' longtime nemesis, if he was picking around here, I think the two guys he'd be looking at and who seem to fit very well with what they've built in terms of just this assembling line of 6'10 freakish athletic wings, he'd be looking at Eason and he'd be looking at a guy like Jeremy Sohan. I personally think Eason is a lot more developed offensively and I like his upside there more than Sohan, but Sohan also fits that mold of a guy who could probably be a small ball five as well as play on the wing. So,
well, we keep mentioning Tibbs and how we know he's going to be the coach next year, but how much of an impact of Tom Thibodeau being the head coach do you think should have on who the team picks? Like Tari Eason being a small ball five and Tom Thibodeau maybe not wanting to play a small ball five, should that mean that the Knicks should pass on him?
Zero impact to answer your question.
Yeah.
And I will add that as much as Tibbs may not be willing to do that, it might just be an Obi thing, because I really don't think Obi is, like, I personally am not thrilled about the idea of him playing the five. I think they should have done it more with him and Randall because there's other things he brings.
Randall should have played the five.
Like, yeah, I mean, you can play one of them.
He played the five in New Orleans because AD didn't want to. I never understood why they didn't have Randall play the five. He already had done it. It was, I don't know.
And if Mitch walks, maybe that's what they end up going to more. Mm-hmm. But the difference, I think, in that is at least I do think Tari provides more rim protection than actually either of those guys, for that matter, because he has the length of Obi, more athleticism than Randall, and he can play drop. He can move his feet. That's really, I mean, Obi can protect the rim just from a vertical standpoint. It's more kind of the agility laterally. So, but to answer your question, no, I don't think Tibbs should impact it, just because they have so much versatility and so much depth. Like, if they loved Ty Washington, I wouldn't be a fan of the pick, but if they see him as like this guy who can get to the rim a lot, like, I would take that. I think he's too much similar to what the Knicks already have, but you know, they should take the best player available regardless of fit, the guy who kind of gives them that star upside and what they're missing. And you know, and I think no matter what, there's such a logjam that really until Burks and Fournier and Nerlens Noel and those contracts they signed are gone, no matter who they pick is probably not going to have a big role next year, which is fine. You know, if they have to do the Deuce McBride thing and play in the G League more, that's fine for a year. We have time. And then I think in a year, we'll probably clear more of those contracts out, or maybe we end up trading some of the young guys as well for a star, like, you know, Donovan Mitchell or something. Mm-hmm. But either way, whoever we draft is probably not going to be a meaningful contributor into year two. I think that's probably the mindset they should go in with.
And I think that's why taking a guy who's maybe more of a home run swing, like you kind of we've been talking about here, makes sense, because you don't need to have a home run in year one. If he's, you know, a stud in year two, then that's perfect. So you can kind of take a chance on a guy who you might think might need a little more time to develop. And I guess just while we're on the Eason thing, I'm looking up his hand size right now.
Yeah.
He had, it looks like if you go the hand length and hand width, he had the biggest hands in the draft, because he's 9.25 length and then 11 on width. So he's got some big hands.
Yeah. 11 was the width. By the way, not to plug too much, but Presidente had a good article, a good profile on the Strickland on Tari Eason today, which I recommend reading. But he's at 11. For comparison's sake, Kawhi Leonard was 11.25. So Kawhi has massive hands. So
yeah, I mean, I feel like Kawhi with the hands is like one of those, you know, like Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard. It's one of those things I feel like we've heard about. But yeah, Eason, I mean, monster athletically. If he could turn into half of what Kawhi is, I think that would be obviously great pick for the Knicks. I guess now, is there anybody, like, kind of, I'm looking at my board here, kind of hit on some of these. What are you guys' thoughts? And I guess this is one guy who I know I've seen him mock to the Knicks a few times. What are you guys' thoughts of Benedict Mathurin out of Arizona?
I like him, but I don't have him ahead of like Davis or like, well, I guess ahead of Duren, but I think him and Davis are probably both going to be there, and I would take Davis ahead of him. I even like, I know, Dana, I know you have Malachi Branham pretty low on your board from Ohio State, but I would take Malachi ahead of him too.
You think
and I
so?
Know that might be pretty controversial, because I know a lot of Knicks fans love Mathurin. I don't know how you feel about him, Stacey, but I don't know. Maybe it's because I watched a lot more because the Pac-12 was on so freaking late, but I really like Branham, and I don't know. Mathurin is going, I'm not saying he's not going to be like really good or anything. I just would, there's other guys I would take over him.
Yeah. I like Mathurin, I like Branham a lot. I do like Mathurin, but on Branham, despite the fact that he went to Ohio State.
Yeah, I don't like Ohio I don't like Ohio State. Well, honestly,
who does?
The football is the problem.
But I like both their – I like Liddell and Branham actually quite a bit. And for what it's worth, they also seemed again, despite being Buckeyes, like very personable in their like Mike Schmidt's interviews. So like cool personalities. Mm-hmm. Branham, I thought about putting over Davis, to be honest. Wow. He's very young. He brings that three-level scoring. It's tough to not be reminded of Chris Middleton when you watch him play. You know, he has the length to shoot over guys. He has that mid-range game. I think he's, you watch Malachi Branham handle post double teams, and if you've watched Julius Randle for an entire season, it's like, oh, can you do this? Because he anticipates. He's a very, he's an underrated passer. He doesn't pop as much. I think Johnny Davis is probably a slightly better athlete, and Branham should have been a better defender. That could also be similar to Duke. Ohio State both lack talent, and also for like the last two seasons just hasn't prioritized defense. Not least because they go small anyway with Liddell at the five often, and in the Big Ten, you're basically conceding that we're not going to stop Kofi Coburn or Hunter Dickinson or last year Luka Garza. So you're not going to be good on defense no matter what. But I would like to see more impact from Branham there. I do want to ask you about Duren, because I realized I talked and we kind of moved a lot on that. So Chip, I know you're a little bit higher on Duren, so I'd want to ask you about that. But kind of on Mathurin, I've gone back and forth. I think that today I was reading more about it, him, and I'm a little bit more comfortable taking him. I wouldn't take him over Johnny. I would take him over Branham, and here's why. First of all, he really does bring special shooting. He would, I think, walk into the Knicks and be up there with Grimes and Fournier in terms of shooting ability.
Okay.
And the versatility, movement shooting, pull-up shooting, he has all of that. He has a very quick first step. He has good passing vision. There's two things that give me pause about Mathurin. One, his ball handling isn't there. So if you really wanted to see his full potential, he needs to work on that. And that's going to take a few years. It's a little similar to Jaylen Brown, I think, out of college. The other thing is that for all his tools, there were certain stats where it was like, oh, why isn't he having more impact? One of those is getting to the rim. He is a above the rim athlete. He has good body control and good touch. But I think if you look at unassisted rim attempts for 40, which is a good metric for guards, he had less than two, not attempts, makes per 40. He had less than two, which isn't great for a primary ball handler. You'd like to see him in the higher twos. I think there's other guards with a lot more. Johnny Davis, I think, was over three. And the other thing is, like, if you look at kind of his defensive rebounding, his steal rate, block rate, and defensive advanced stats, he didn't have a ton of impact. On defense, I wasn't super impressed with him. I think he has a good motor, but he often got lost off ball. He sometimes had some really great awareness, so I think it might be just a focus thing, because I don't think he has bad feel or anything. But I would have liked the impact to be higher. Overall, though, I'm pretty comfortable betting on him being something like a Norm Powell or something like those kind of guys, a scorer who can hold up on defense, do more than just shoot. And then the question is, how much more upside is there? If the handle improves, is that a guy who can take a heavy on-ball load, both as a pick-and-roll ball handler as well as an isolation scorer? I think that's going to be 2 or 3 years away. But the Knicks could do a lot worse than Benedict Mathurin.
And you'll take Norm Powell at 11. If he turns into Norm Powell, you'll be very satisfied with that, I think.
And I think a lot of these guys, I said the same thing about Eason. A lot of them have pretty good, like, we kept talking about Kawhi with Eason, but that's like a 99th percentile outcome. And he doesn't need to be that to be a pretty good pick. Like a lot of these guys we've talked about, their median outcomes are good, including Duren. So I do want to go back to him, Chip. What really, and if you want to tell me that I was wrong about kind of me limiting his ceiling or whatever, that's fine too. But what excites you about Duren?
Well, I love, I'm a Duke fan, so I love Mark Williams. And I was really high on him in the Duke homer. And he was like, we got to take Williams. Mm-hmm. We got to take Williams. And I understand why people are so low on him. There's stuff to be skeptical about, but like you're talking earlier about stuff that pops with people when you just watch them. And I just feel like with Duren, he's so like his shot blocking, his athleticism. And I know you said you don't buy the shot. I just feel like there's more to him than just, and I kind of feel this way about Mark too, but there's more to him than just being able to roll to the rim and dunk. Like I've seen, like it's a small sample size of post moves. I know that. And the floater, I know that. but it just looks good. Yeah. Like, and he's, look, most of it, I feel like he can come in and do pretty much not as well as what Mitch does, but I think he can become what Mitch is. Yeah. And I just, maybe it's frustration over Mitch not becoming the player that we thought he was going to be. And, you know, not wanting to give $50 million to Mitch. That's on top of that. But
you wouldn't give him 50 over 4 years?
50 over 4 years?
Yeah.
I'm nervous, honestly, about committing to him long-term that much, about paying him that money and then seeing where he goes after that. Why, you would sign up 4 years, 52 for Mitch?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with the cap going up. And look, I think he's a top 10 to 12 center. If I wasn't going to do that, I would rather go the JaVale McGee route, unless I get a center that could be a lot more than that. So that's what's interesting about both Durin and, you know, we can talk about Mark Williams a little bit, because the Knicks drafting is mostly led up by a guy by the name of Walt Perrin, mm-hmm. who famously, yes, at pick 21, drafted Rudy Gobert, who Mark Williams has the same standing reach as. I believe it was something like 7'2 and 7'7 wingspan or something like that, 7'8. He is outlier big. We're not talking about Mitchell Robinson big. We're talking about much bigger.
He's a giant. Mark
Williams. He's massive.
Big. And it showed up in his block rate. I'm worried about him being strictly a drop big. But he also improved his free throw shooting, 72%. I mean, it'd be nice to see him. Every time there's a lob and Mitch gets fouled, just like, man, that's almost like a turnover is not a good feeling.
Yeah.
You'd have less of that with Mark Williams. He would probably off. The one reason I would say, if you were to pick Williams over Durin, I think off the bat, he gives you rim protection that I'm not sure. I think Durin, because he is a little bit smaller, it's going to take more time. Durin, the ceiling, I think, is higher, but Williams is probably going to walk in and be able to plug that hole if the Knicks lose Mitch. Let's talk about, and also what I'll ask you about Williams is, do you think there's like room for him to be maybe a Mo Bamba type in terms of just being able to, like, if you leave him wide open, take an open three?
The three, I don't know if he's, what was Mo? Mo was like 38% maybe this year. Maybe we're getting ahead of Mo was 38% on like pretty good volume.
So I don't, he was 38. You were looking at his stats recently, weren't you? Four shots a game. You're right.
Chip checks the magic. He checks the magic stats every day.
I'm a big Mo Bamba guy. Cards on the table.
Is that someone you would target?
I would. You were talking about JaVale McGee. That's Mo. I get would cost a little more than JaVale, but that's more of a sign that I would go towards if they pass on both bigs and let Mitch walk. I think that's safer. Yeah, I'm not sure. Again, we go back to Tibbs, how Tibbs would feel about him, but I think he is a pretty, you know, and he's also younger. Maybe you could get more out of him, but I would lean towards Mo for sure if they pass on these guys. But as far as Mark goes, yeah, I think the improvement in the free throw percentage, I think he can maybe not necessarily be a 38% shooter, but I think he can get out there and, you know, be like maybe like a Brook Lopez three, not like 33% free throw shooter, something like that. I don't want to go and say from not taking any threes at all to all of a sudden he's going to become a 38% three-point shooter. I think maybe league average at you hope, but it's a stretch to say Mo Bamba, but I don't know. I'm high on him. Obviously I'm biased too, but you saw the development from last year to this year where you didn't even really know this year if he was going to get consistent or be like the starter for sure, because that's how it works there. And he just came in and was great. And I don't know. I think there's more to him too when he comes into the NBA. Well, it all depends on who drafts him. Just like with Durin, it depends on who drafts him with centers. So we'll see. They may just ask him to come in and not shoot at all, and it may not matter.
That's I don't see either guy really turning into like Mo Bamba with the shot. But I think both guys are going to turn into like that prototypical rim running center who can defend the paint on one end and then give you some kind of vertical gravity kind of in the post and above the rim, which I think that really just comes down to like how do you value that player? Goes back to the argument about like JaVale McGee. Like, is that a player that you're willing to take a lottery pick on, a guy like that? Or is that something you think you can get that same production elsewhere?
Because I think, well, I mean, both are going to be. Is probably going to cost a mint, right? Now, he might take a mint to go to, you know, stay in Phoenix or go to Golden State, where he'll get more of a chance at a ring. That's, I think, my argument is, like, those guys are, like, another guy we haven't talked about is Isaiah Hartenstein, who I don't know if it's Hartenstein or Hartenstein, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard it both ways. So
maybe I'm exposing myself as a casual. Someone had tweeted this and I felt very seen about Jeremy Sochan, whose name is spelled like Sochan.
Yeah.
So you're like, man, you could tell who hasn't watched when they say Sochan. I think he was talking about like Schmitz or Givney, which is less forgivable for them than me, but I was like, oh yeah, I've definitely made that mistake before.
Yeah.
But I think on the rim running thing, I think with Duran or Williams, if you do take them there, I think at least the Robert Williams stuff, the passing, you know, Chip kind of talked about this, the floater, like doing more than, like, it doesn't have to be shooting threes, then that'd be being Mo Mamba or
passing something else. Just you need to add like one extra
outside
facet.
Of 2 feet away from the hoop, Mitch doesn't really give you anything offensively. Yeah. So that's the thing.
Yeah. I think I'm higher than Mitch on a lot, not least because I think he makes up for some of the offensive shortcomings with the offensive rebounding, because he is not a good offensive rebounder. He's probably two or three in the league. You know, that's, but I hear you. And I think that being able to go five out, especially for a guy like RJ, we'll see what happens with Randall, but he would benefit from that too. You know, that's a look you'd love to give them. And if it's not five out, a big who doesn't allow you to just collapse into the paint, right? But at the free throw line is a threat. So both actually making free throws when he gets fouled, but also he gets the ball there.
Yeah. You know, him, his free throw shooting is a killer. It really is. Just knowing that when he goes to the line, he's going to miss one of them. I don't want to trash Mitch. I don't want it to sound like I'm a Mitch hater or anything.
Chip's the one Mitch hater.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they took him at the second round. That's one of the most successful draft picks, certainly before this front office got here. I think he's a good player, an above average center with pretty obvious limitations. I do want to, Danny, you brought up Mathurin. So I do want to kind of give you a chance to talk about him. How do you, cause like this, there's a glut of wings, which is, this is
a lot
part
of wings.
Of the reason,
yeah.
There's, this is part of the reason why I don't want the Knicks to take Williams or Duran. It's not necessarily something against them as prospects, but it seems like we drafted Cleanthony early. We drafted, you know, when guys like Michael Bridges, Miles Bridges and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander were on the board, we took a guy we hoped would be a freakish long wing and it didn't work out. We definitely don't need to trash Kevin Knox here. But it just seems like those kind of guys are never available. If they're available, it's a player with glaring flaws, right? Even a guy like Evan Fournier, we paid him 18. Everyone cries about that contract. That's market.
Good contract. Mm-hmm. It's a good contract.
That's market value for what he is.
And yet, he has flaws in his game. The kind of wing that can shore up things on defense and be a plus on offense and is like 6'7" plus, it's just so tough to find. And that's whereas I think centers who can give you at least 75% of what a guy like Mitch can give you are much easier to find. And we're in a position in the draft where we actually have a bunch of those guys. The last time we were this high in the draft, I did want Devin Vassell. My top guy was Killian Hayes, which doesn't look so great in hindsight.
I was high on him too.
A lot of people wanted him. Yeah. A lot of people wanted.
But another guy was Devin Vassell. And a lot of people at the time were like, this is this 6'7" long ass wing who can shoot. And we have a bunch of those guys, not all of them. Sochan can't shoot, for example, but that's part of the reason. And I think Mathurin is in that, he's not freakishly long. He's actually not that much bigger than Johnny Davis. But you know, he gives you some of those attributes. What do you think about Davis, Danny?
Mathurin. Yeah, I knew where you're going with that. I'm a huge fan. I'm very, very high on him. And I think it's honestly probably biased since I kind of like started, I watched a little bit of Arizona early in the year. Now I don't watch a ton of Pac-12, but I knew he was like kind of a riser. I was like, I want to pay attention to this guy. I think kind of, I'll start with the bad, I guess, the defensive stuff. I think you guys kind of hit on it a little bit. Like he has these lapses where you're like, man, he should be better. Like he should be doing more on that end. And I think part of it is that he just kind of relies on his athleticism a little bit too much. Like you'll see him make these crazy blocks from the backside, and you know, he just like jumps through the rim or through the gym and like makes these crazy plays. And I think sometimes he might just rely on that a little too much. But then offensively, I could see him becoming a big time three level scorer if he can kind of hone that mid range game, get a little bit better about getting to the cup and using that athleticism. But I think the thing that really pops for me is just he can knock down threes, and he's not a guy who can like, oh, just stick him on as like a spot up shooter. Like he could pull ups in transition. He could come off stagger screens. He could stand in the corner and he could hit that shot. Like he can do anything that you want to ask a 3-point shooter to do. And I think there's a lot of guys who can knock down open threes when no one's covering them. I think Mathurin is one of those guys who can knock down open threes in so many different variety of ways that for me, he's somebody who just stands out among like a lot of these wings just for that reason alone. Cause obviously every team shoots a ton of threes, even the Knicks now. Getting a guy who you could basically just any way you want. I think he's a little bit similar to Fournier in that. Although Fournier was a little bit more of a spot up guy than maybe in previous years, when he was running off some of those staggers. But yeah, I'm super, super high on Mathurin. I think, you know, he's not perfect. There's some things he's got to work on, kind of like his playmaking chops, which I think bleeds into that ball handling argument. Like he's just got to be a little bit stronger with it when he's creating and attacking and trying to create for others. I think he needs to be a little bit stronger with the ball there. But I see very high upside with like a very high floor as well, just because he can shoot the three.
Yeah, let me ask you a little one other thing on the not so much ball handling, but getting to the rim. You mentioned that, and I agree. I think that's something you would have liked to see him do more. How much do you think that was affected by Arizona playing? Arizona absolutely should have played two bigs. They had a lot of talent there. But they played two bigs. The spacing wasn't ideal for someone like him to showcase being able to get to the rim. How much do you think that played a factor versus, you know, maybe ball handling limitations or maybe even a mentality thing?
I mean, obviously, like definitely when you have two bigs in there, it really kind of like mucks things up for a guy like Mathurin, for him using his athleticism. But I also don't want to completely let him off the hook because he is so much more talented than, you know, 99% of the guys that he stepped on the floor with in college, that it's like, there's two bigs. Yeah, it can get a little crowded in there, but he should have been doing a little bit more there. So like, I don't want to completely let him off the hook, but also, you know, for me, who's somebody who's very high on him, I would like that to be the case where like he gets the next level. There's a little bit more space on the floor and he could kind of showcase his ability to get to the rim and really use that athleticism. I hope that's the case. And I do think that he's going to figure it out at some point once he kind of develops a little bit more, gets that ball handling a little bit tighter. But I think just the fact that he can shoot that three and he can do so many different things there. I don't know. Like, I feel like high floor saying that about guys is sometimes almost like a backhanded compliment because you're like kind of maybe underrating their ceiling. But I think just kind of the skills, the athleticism, the 3-point shooting right now is why I would definitely take a chance on him if I were the Knicks at 11 and he falls there. I would love that pick. He might even be my, like, if we're going to talk about like perfect draft scenario, I think for all of us would be if, you know, Smith or Holmgren or Banchero fell to the Knicks, but like, obviously not going to happen. The perfect, like, realistic scenario for me, I think Mathurin is definitely up there in the conversation for me.
Yeah, and he has, I mean, personality is not something you want to put too much into, but, you know, watched his interview with Schmitz. He's trained with RJ Barrett, so I think they have
another Canadian.
And he seems to have kind of a very quiet confidence, but he has, like, that swagger. He's a personal guy. You saw that dunk he had in the tournament. I mean, imagine that at Madison Square Garden.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So he definitely has that it factor as well.
For Sure, for sure. But you were talking about dream scenarios, Danny, and I definitely wanted to talk about the possibility of trading up. And it's going to be hard to get into like the top four, probably even the top five. But I think like the top six, seven, and eight, I think seems possible. Maybe not nine, but Pacers at six, Blazers at seven, Pelicans at eight is all going to be possible. What do you, Stacey, what do you think about the possibility of trading up, giving up assets and to trade up?
Yeah. So one trade that's been talked about a lot is Portland. Somebody was saying today, I don't know if this is can be sourced, but I forget his name and I apologize for this, but the host of Locked On Blazers came on Locked On Knicks. He was saying that he could see the Blazers being interested in Randall for the 7th pick without the 11th pick. I think that NBA trade report, I think, reported something to the same effect, which it's not verified. And
yeah.
Take that with buckets of salt, but you know, I would do that in a heartbeat. And I'd say this, I would do that in a heartbeat and root for Dame and Randall to do really well.
Of course.
I don't really have ill will towards Randall. I think I would like to see the Knicks move in a different direction. That's a separate thing. In terms of guys, no doubt about it, I would trade up for, there's four. Who I think are the consensus top four, the consensus top three, and Ivy. Ivy is a guy who I would love on the Knicks. There's a guy who's fifth, who's very close. I do think some of the stuff with him not working out is a little bit shady because he hasn't played in a year. That's Shaedon Sharpe.
Yeah.
And then the guy who's like that borderline, would I trade up for him? There's two. I would put Griffin in there if the Knicks are comfortable with the medicals. And then Keegan Murray I actually just put out a piece on the Strickland about Keegan Murray. On the one hand, he's another guy who's high floor, but that shouldn't just be backhanded compliment. Elite scorer. Like Eason, it's like, you know, yeah, you can say, well, can he get buckets at the NBA? Does he have a bag? Screw the bag. He scored a ton. Transition, spot ups, you know, post ups. He also gives you some of that flexibility. I don't know if he's quite as like brolic as Azen and long as you'd like want him to play a small ball five, but for the really creative coach, you could see that in time. A little bit older, but him and Griffin are like, if the Knicks are into it, if the front office buys in, it's worth it. But after that, even Johnny Davis, I'm not sold on using assets to trade up for him. Like if it's Randall to get the 7th pick, sure. If it's Randall to trade up the 7th again, Davis is close to that category of like if the Knicks office front office is sold, but like that's probably my line. Like I'm not trading up. I'm probably not trading up for Mathurin. Probably wouldn't trade up for Eason. You know, past those first five or six guys, and Griffin, depending on the Knicks evaluation of his athleticism and ability to regain it, I would probably just stand pat and know that we're going to get a pretty good player at 11. Cause I do think that's going to be the case.
Yeah. I'm torn on trading up for, you know, a lot of the same reasons. I have Smith, Holmgren, Banchero, and then Ivy. I think those top three, maybe like a bit higher than Ivy, but I think those four are kind of like, I think almost at this point, yeah, the consensus, like top four in the draft. Shaedon Sharpe is interesting. Like, I mean, if the Knicks really fall in love with them and he falls a little bit and you can trade up to a 7-8, you know, not something like that and get him, I think it would be an aggressive move. And I would like to see just kind of the, the ambition to go out and try and get a guy that you think can be a franchise changer. But yeah, I mean, you guys know, I love Mathurin. I like a lot, like Griffin, Daniels, Johnny Davis. There's a lot of guys in this draft I like, but I don't know if I would really go up and trade everything to get him. I think if one of those top four guys were to fall and they could figure it out, and then maybe the Shaedon Sharpe just on the like those kind of that interesting situation of if the Knicks love him too. But I think from basically 5 to, you know, 15, 16, 17 on the board, I think you have options. So it's, you don't have to give up assets to move up, because if somebody takes Johnny Davis, then it's like, all right, well now Griffin might fall. Somebody takes Griffin. All right. Well, maybe now Dyson Daniels is there. Maybe they like him. So I think there's too many guys who are kind of in that same range for me where I don't think it would make sense to give up assets just to move up to get somebody. But yeah, that being said, if they could trade Randall for the 7th pick, and then, you know, fill in the gaps around that to make the money work, I'd be all for that.
It would be worth it even if Eric Bledsoe plays 30 minutes and Quickly still is only playing 18. If we get the 7th pick for Randall, I'll grip my teeth through that. It's also interesting, like, it's also what's the price? So to move up to 7, if it's that, like, if it's at 7 and you could get even a guy like Davis, if you have to give up the Dallas 23 pick, that's probably as far as I'm comfortable going for, like, a non-top 4. You know, using that pick, if we're trading into the top 4, let's say Sacramento is interested.
There was a report about that they may be willing to move that. Jake Fisher reported it too, so it's a legitimate report.
You would think it'd be like, I don't think I'm willing to like, that's the thing, there are people who would be like, I trade Quickly if it gives us a chance at Ivy.
Ideally you want the two of them playing together though, yeah, so I don't know about that,
but I also don't see, I mean, it's Vivek, so who knows? But I don't see Sacramento moving that pick without either, like, pretty weakly protected first in the future, or RJ, one of RJ Quickly. I don't even know if OB, I don't think OB is enough to get that done. So. No. I get probably at least one of RJ Quickly. Would you guys do that to get to the top 4?
Not RJ Quickly. No. I would have to think about it. Because like Chip said, pairing Quickly and Ivy together to me is very intriguing. But giving up Quickly to move up, it's tough because you don't want to be like a, you know, prospect hugger, you know, like just be obsessed with the young guys and overvalue the young guys. I think too many people do that when they get kind of like just locked into, you know, one team like we kind of are. Because you got to give up good players to get good, you know, draft picks or players, whatever it is. But that would be a tough one for me.
Yeah, we talked on Knicks Fan TV. We talked about trading up a boatload of picks to go up and get Jaden Ivey, and I was like, yeah, let's do. I would absolutely do that. And I forget who the prospect was to trade, but it wasn't Quickly. I want Quickly to be, as much as I like Tyus, I want Quickly to be the starting point guard next year. Mm-hmm. And I would love if Ivey were playing with him.
Tyus, not Brunson.
Yes, I prefer Tyus. The Brunson. Yeah, I know that's not the popular.
No,
one.
There's a lot of I mean, the Grizzlies were terrific there. With there are those who make the case. I think it overstates it.
Oh boy, yeah.
That the Grizzlies were better with Tyus instead of another point guard. But that said, he is obviously very talented and good floor general.
I love Brunson. I just don't think I don't think Dallas is going to let him out of their clutches now that they've gone, you know, this far, and I mean, we'll see what happens tonight, but.
Oh, that's what Cuban's implying right now. It doesn't mean he's going to be willing to pay all that money. It's a lot of money that he's going to have to pay. So, I don't know. And also Brunson may want to come to New York anyway and come.
True. Yeah. I mean, he's UFA. He's not locked into anything there.
Exactly.
So I guess I'll just move it into kind of like a final segment here. We kind of talked about guys we like at this point, but I guess we'll go down the line and we'll say who, if you had to say right now, which I'm sure this is going to change for myself, I know that, but sure, as the draft comes closer, we'll be changing this. Who is your prediction to go to the Knicks right now at 11? Or I mean, I don't know if you think they're going to trade up, trade down, like essentially just what is your prediction for Knicks at 11 right now? I guess we'll start with our guest Stacy. You go ahead, and then Chip, and I guess I'll have a minute here to think over my answer.
If he's available, Davis.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Yeah.
If he's available, Davis or Griffin, more likely I would say Mathurin.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was just going to say Davis just because we've already seen it kind of start to build. And look, Griffin could be the pick too, but I think it's more likely Davis I'm going to go with.
Yeah. And he's more likely to fall than Griffin. But I think Mathurin is the most likely to fall out of those three. And I do think the Knicks will take him over guys like Eason or one of the bigs.
Oh, you do? Why do you think Mathurin's the most likely to fall out of those three guys?
Davis has a ton going for him. I think I could see him as a pick for most of the top teams.
a little more oomph or projectable outcome as a scorer, which most of those times need, and defense. And then Griffin, I think he was talked about top five, top six for most of the year. Things change, but I don't think they're going to change that much. And Mathurin, I think, yeah, like I think Jonathan Wasserman had him all the way down at 13. So I think he was another guy that was a victim of, you know, looked good in the, in like, it's not that he looked bad, but other guys impressed so much. Like a guy, he had Dyson Daniels at five. I don't know if I buy that yet, but I think Daniels has risen above where he was. And I think a couple of those guys are going to push.
Branham's moving up too. That could hurt him too.
Yeah. Branham could move up. Good measurables and all that. So, and like some of those guys have more of the three level scoring. Like, I think you did a great job of talking about it, Danny, where it's like, it's definitely there for Mathurin, but we just haven't seen it as much as some of these other guys. And I could see that pushing him down.
Yeah. And I guess this won't make the most exciting kind of outro, but yeah, I've and take my mock drafts with a grain of salt. I'm not like, you know, Schmitz and all these guys who are doing this year round, but I have Mathurin going to the Knicks at 11 in my latest mock, which I think I still will stick to that as of right now. I could see, I mean, I could see a lot of these like Griffin, Davis, Mathurin, I could see the three of them. I could see any of them slipping to the Knicks where it makes sense to go there. But then on the other hand, I could see, you know, a team kind of higher up falling in love, you know, maybe the Pacers really like Griffin's 3-point shooting and his, you know, athleticism upside. I think we're still kind of in that awkward stage of where we don't really know exactly where everybody's going to go. I mean, because Chip and I have talked about this before, but you know, a few years ago when the Knicks were picking Kevin Knox, 2 or 3 weeks before that, it was like Bridges was the guy. It was like, oh, the Knicks are, you know, that Bridges is going to be the guy, and that changed. So yeah, so I think that's just my you never know. Everything's
hopefully
gonna change.
This turns out better than that.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully they get Bridges instead of Knox, which whoever Bridges is in this draft, whether it's Mathurin or Griffin. But yeah, I don't know. I think we're still a little bit ways away. We still have like kind of a long way to go. I know you guys, just to touch on it on the way out almost, you guys are high on Branham, and I think I have to dig into him a little bit more because it seems like he's really flying up people's boards. So yeah, for myself, I know I gotta still do a little bit on this leading into the draft, but hey, we're not in that front office. Our jobs aren't on the line for who we pick. So it's a little bit more fun for us to debate this and talk about it and have a little bit of fun with it. Thanks again for coming on, Stacey. Do you have anything you want to plug kind of on the way out here? I know Pod Strickland, you guys have been doing some great stuff there. And the Strickland, I know just every day you guys have great stuff coming out, especially this time of year with the draft.
Yeah, no, really, thanks for having me on. A lot of fun to catch up with you guys. You can find me on Twitter at StaceyPatton89. So I do write for the Strickland, and I do Pod Strickland. I do one episode with Shwini Poo. I guess I'm a little bit of the ice to his fire. If you listen to us,
that makes sense.
And I also actually host a pod with Matthew Miranda, who is a far more talented writer than me, who's also writes for Strickland. But we do the Believe Knicks podcast. And the only other thing I'll plug is our draft coverage, like you mentioned. The best person to follow for all that is Presidente. Just lives, breathes, and sleeps draft stuff. I know he has a very demanding job, completely unrelated to the NBA draft, and yet he finds a lot of time to do all of this. Presidente, Draft Film School, Alex, also very Knicks focused, but just the Strickland, we're going to have a lot of stuff coming out on the draft. So keep an eye out for all that.
Yeah, awesome. And if you guys made it this far into our draft talk here, thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Knicks State of Mind podcast.